Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
Do you have a voice filter on?
I don't think so.
Okay. Just sounds weird in my headphones.
Well, because you have them on backwards.
Maybe that's it. It does sound really weird.
You should probably put them on the right way.
Probably right.
Good radio.
Does it sound better?
To me, it sounds the same.
No, it sounds better. You're right. Yeah. It was the headphones in backwards.
That's really weird, isn't it?
Is it echoing?
Oh, okay. I don't think it. Well, the stream has a little bit of an echo. Coming to you live from Ronald McDonald Studios. We are still at Ronald McDonald House. Who are you? I'm the great and powerful Mr. E.
I'm starving artist, J-Clone 108.
108. We have a listener that his wife was talking about one day when she gets the free time. She's going to go through all the episodes and compile a list of all the J-Clones.
I wonder how many I repeat. I feel like I repeat a lot. I get stuck on numbers.
Only a handful.
Let's see.
Of clones ever make a reappearance.
A lot in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the 70s.
The double digits get
a lot. Well, I mean, it's just... the models that like to record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like mustard and biscuits. Mm-hmm.
What is that from?
Got, what you got there?
Ain't got no gas in it, right?
Yeah, you ain't got no gas.
Okay.
It's a Sling Blade.
Okay. Before we get rocking and rolling into the episode, like I was saying, we are at Ronald McDonald House. Emily is still pregnant as of recording this. She may not be as of this whenever this comes out.
As of listening to this.
Yeah. So we're bulk recording. So the next 5 weeks of episodes are being recorded in series. So you'll slowly hear us get more tired and deranged as the episodes go on.
You're always deranged.
Deranged?
Yes.
We got some events this summer. Jay's going to be at Bigfoot Manjos, which is June 8th.
I will probably be there.
I already told Higginbottom you're going to be there.
I'm supposed to be there, so...
And then I will be at Monster Fest by myself. Jay will be at, what is it, National Bowling?
Yeah, National Bowling Tournament in Las Vegas, Nevada.
There you go.
At South Point Casino.
I may have somebody with me. A good friend. I'm trying to get Joe to go. Which you guys will hear about when we do the Encounter Quest review.
Oh, to go with you to Monster Fest.
Yeah.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
I told him, you know, he's invited. All right, but to get to this episode, to get on topic, to get into what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about corn sharks.
Corn sharks.
So you only know the title.
Yes, it's like two of your favorite things.
I like corn. I like sharks.
I know.
Corn sharks. When I say corn sharks, what do you think I mean?
Sharks swimming around the corn.
So when me and Emily were dating and we lived in Nelsonville, there was a farmer that would always take either corn or soybeans, depending on which field he planted, and he would put out every year these giant wooden shark fins, and then he'd have one shark head popping up. So like the corn was the water.
Yeah.
So you could just see these shark fins going through the field. And he'd go out and move them around and stuff like that every day.
Like an art installation kind of.
Yeah, I think he did it because there was a lot of kids on his road that went to the bus.
Yeah.
And so it was fun to be around because it was just like, you could tell it was just an older guy that just enjoyed having fun with the kids on the bus.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. But yeah, corn sharks. So you think of corn, like sharks in the corn.
Yeah, you've seen Napoleon Dynamite, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the part where they're like, yeah, Lyle's going to take care of a cow. He can feed you. And the school bus pulls, he's trying to.
Oh, and shoots the cow.
Oh, and the gun's like stuck. The bus pulls up full of kids. Finally, he shoots it right in front of them all.
Napoleon Dynamite is one of those. I think it came out when I was too young to enjoy it because I didn't like the movie.
I'll be honest. My first impression of it, I hated it. I was mad because everyone hyped it up. I hated it.
But I think I was too young for it. Think it was funny.
Perhaps. But
let's see. When that come out?
Oh, shoot. 2004? It's been a while. It's old.
Emily's in the background.
20 years ago now.
I don't know if they can hear you or not.
Probably.
Maybe you hear a little peep. It's Emily.
But yeah, it maybe sucked at first, but the more you watch it, the more you appreciate all the little things.
It's
yeah.
The same actor from Blade's
Glory. Well, yeah, they John Heater. That's where he started, John Heater. That was his starting debut.
Anyways, corn sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to actually revisit somebody that we talked about a really, really long time ago. I'm going to say episode 5 or something ever.
Was it the Corn Wolves?
No, that was on Patreon.
Oh, okay.
No, this is way before that.
Way before Corn Wolves?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've been doing this a while. The Lake Erie Chomper.
Oh, I don't
remember. The South Bay Bessie episode?
I remember
the Lake Erie Chomper. There have been reports of people coming out of the waters of Lake Erie, writhing in pain from a very strange creature that had bitten the flesh of their legs. The story begins at the Pump House Beach near Port Dover, Ontario. 47-year-old Brendan McCormack, it's a very weird name, Brendan McCormack,
okay,
had plunged into Lake Erie for a refreshing retreat in the summer heat of 2001. Brianna, she had not swam for a long time, and she felt a toothy maw wrap around her calf, take a bite right out of it. She quickly reached ashore, staggering and dripping blood all over the beach as she moved. There was a 6-inch series of circular bite marks that had sharp jaws, similar to that of a cookie cutter shark. So she had these 3 or 4 bites out of her leg that were like chunks of flesh missing that are about 6 inches wide.
What you said, similar to a cookie cutter shark. Is it a cookie cutter shark?
Similar to a cookie cutter shark.
Okay, so it's not one.
Don't jump ahead an hour.
Well, all right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Similar.
Okay. What was I? The following morning, a man and his young son were also attacked by what seems to be the same mysterious scavenging creature. With the boy was being rushed to the hospital and ended up in critical care for his wounds. So he got bit right in the midsection, and a lot of people say it was the same creature. I think it was a similar creature because it seemed like a much bigger bite.
Okay.
The kid was also a lot smaller than she was, though, too.
So it could have appeared
bigger. And he bit into his abdomen. So, you know, a lot of organs there.
Right.
But, yeah. Many people spread rumors what the creature could be. Some said it was a school of piranha that had been released into the lake. Some said a new species of shark. And even Bessie, who swam close to shore, was blamed.
Oh. Don't blame Bessie.
Whatever it is, it seemed like it has not disturbed the population of Port Dover for over 15 years, as when this article came out. Before I continue, do you remember any of this?
No.
So, we did this a long time ago. Like, yeah. Like episode 5 or 6, like, the South Bay Bessie.
Vaguely remember, but I don't.
And thank you, Bo Kennedy, for the South Bay Bessie stickers.
Ooh, shout out to Bo and the Bump Podcast.
The Bump Podcast. Great podcast. You can go listen to Bo. This is one of those stories. I can't tell if it's modern day urban folklore or if it's real. We're going to talk about the doctor, supposedly, who came forward and treated all 3 of the patients.
Okay.
You know. Sorry, my nose tickles. Me and Emily are having a lot of allergies.
All right, back to it.
No, so what do you think it could be? 6-inch bite. The bite on the kid to me seems a little bigger.
What
chunk of meat removed?
In what was this?
Lake Erie.
Just Lake Erie?
Lake Erie.
Okay, so they're on the beach at Lake Erie, hanging out.
Yeah, the northern side of Lake Erie in Canada.
Oh, okay. Even odder. Okay. What could it be?
What do you think it could be? I got all kinds of stuff.
Well, if I was in the ocean, I'd say, okay, cookie cutter shark. That would be my first.
So 6 inches is really big for a cookie cutter shark.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, 6 inches across diameter. That's the size of the hole we're talking?
Yeah. That's really large for a cookie cutter shark. I'm not even sure they get that big. They're one of those animals we don't know a lot about. We see their bite marks on whales.
A squid, perhaps? A squid?
That's a good thing. But it seemed like it had teeth.
Freshwater squid? Okay, so it's okay.
You ever seen like a shark bite on like a surfboard that people show? And, like, you see the teeth or a seal or whatever.
The typical shark bite, cartoony look.
Yeah.
But something just taking a little chunk out. Well, I mean, I guess it could be a little. What about a little bull shark? A small little bull shark.
Interesting thought.
Yeah.
Interesting thought.
They got teeth.
Yeah. So Dr. Harold Heshnick, who treated the three patients who were attacked by the supposed Lake Erie chomper, he studied the wounds and concluded they were, okay, this is where me and this guy may have some issues.
Uh-oh.
Because his round of culprits are very odd to me.
Well, let's see. He's a doctor, after all.
I don't know a doctor of what? A doctor of human medicine, not biology. Round gobies. Which the biggest round goby I've ever seen was 8 inches long. Most of the time, they're the size of your pinky.
Okay. Is that a hungry round goby?
Lampreys. Like he says lamprey eels. They're not eels. They're just lamprey.
Right, yep.
There's parasitic lampreys in Lake Erie. They leave a suction round suction mark, not a chunk. They can't take a chunk. They don't have jaws.
Well, maybe
their jaw is fish.
Maybe they're really, really hungry, and they just suck so hard it sucked a chunk off.
Snapping turtles.
Ooh.
Walleye. Or other musky-type fish, as well as piranhas. So he's lumping piranhas and musky into the same group.
Yeah, I guess I could have a little problem with that, too.
Very different animals all in that. And but he said there's none of these.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know who he blamed?
So none on that list.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to blame a barnacle.
The bowfin.
The bowfin, no.
He blamed the bowfin.
No. They don't have teeth to do that kind of stuff.
They have conical teeth for holding and then shearing lips.
Yeah.
So it'd have been, I've only ever seen him take a chunk out of a muskie, like an actual chunk out of something.
Uh-huh.
And for it to attack, they are extremely aggressive. Okay, so let me read a little bit. These fish can become, everybody listen to the Freaky Fauna Friday about the bowfin to learn some more.
Episode number one.
Yeah. They can become very aggressive and territorial when they have offspring, especially the males. They even protect their nest for up to 9 weeks after spawning, and they guard the fry fiercely. Mm-hmm. I personally witnessed them attacking alligators that swam too close to the fry ball.
Yeah.
So them attacking somebody in this rare, normally they're very docile, they're very reclusive fish. If you get too close to their fry ball, they will swim up and just smack you really hard with it. They'll give you a hard bite.
Nice.
It's not this kind of bite, though.
Right.
I've never seen him cut a chunk out of somebody. I've been bitten by him several times. It sucks.
What's it feel
like?
But
it's not like a chunk. It's like more like a vice grip.
Is it like a dog bite?
No, it's like literally somebody taking a pair of vice grips or pliers and just squeezing really hard on your thumb.
Okay.
Like a crush.
Yeah.
Not like a bite. Okay. Very different. But he said that. And then Jay got to his last thing. Some people even believe the Lake Erie chomper may be a small bull shark.
That's what I think.
Welcome to Corn Sharks, everybody.
Corn Sharks. So where's corn come in?
Just the Midwest. Sharks in the Midwest.
Oh, okay.
That's the whole point of the episode.
Like maybe they're feeding them corn. Maybe the corn stirs them up. Maybe they're a corn hybrid.
All right. So the story of George. There's basically George was swimming in Lake Michigan. This was in 1955. So he is Illinois' only shark attack, confirmed shark attack.
Ooh.
So if you look at the shark chart, you can look this up, and it shows you by state how many shark bites.
Mm-hmm.
The Midwest all glows with two or three bites each state. All of them, besides a very small handful, are bites by aquarium sharks.
Oh, really?
And they get included in that.
Wow. That shouldn't count.
Yeah, that's why it's a little misleading.
Very.
But, you know, not somebody's having fun.
I guess so. I guess it does count. It's a shark that bit somebody.
So George Lawson was swimming on the coast of Lake Michigan, a deep cold water lake. He was swimming. It was 1955. An animal, and he was swimming with other kids, an animal massive in size, had bit onto his leg and shook his body viciously. They say the attack was unprovoked, and I can't find a lot of details. There's very, very limited stuff on this, but it was non-fatal, but he was in the hospital for months. One thing I find strange, if you look at the list of shark attacks in recent history, is it's compiled by a nonprofit called Shark Research Institute, and it lists shark attacks in Lake Michigan in 1955. That's it. That's one of the few I can find that lists this. So how would a shark get into Lake Michigan? Is that even possible?
Oh, yeah, it's possible.
How?
Well, you can just swim there.
Who knows? Anything could be possible.
You know, in all reality, there's two options I see is very plausible. One, it's just swimming through the river systems, and I think that bull sharks can survive and salty, brackish, or even freshwater. So history tells. The other reason is, back when the Navy was doing those experiments where they're just got those giant flippers in the ocean and whatever fish swims over it just launches them into the mainland U.S. and see where they land. Yeah, one of them, a shark, landed in Lake Erie.
Oh, there you go. So Lake Michigan and Lake Erie. Very different lakes.
Both of them.
Two bull sharks swam up the Missouri River to St. Louis, study finds.
Missouri River?
The Mississippi River.
Okay.
In Missouri. St. Louis, Missouri.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense.
So we're going to talk about, there's a lot of arguments with bull sharks in North America versus other countries.
Okay.
So we'll talk about bull sharks, you know, towards the end of this episode pretty extensively in their biology. This whole idea that there are several attacks from cryptids or animals in the Ohio River, the Northern Mississippi River, the Missouri River, and the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of biologists argue is impossible to be bull sharks.
Why?
We'll get to that.
Oh.
I don't agree with them.
You're just holding out on me.
Well, yeah, that's the point. So we're going to talk about this study. Two bull sharks swim up the Mississippi River. The research confirms that two sightings, but besides them, the sighting record of the United States was littered with incomplete reports. Two bull sharks, which are native to the Gulf of Mexico, made their way up to the St. Louis by swimming up the Mississippi separately, 1937 and 1995, recent study confirms. So before this, it was a lot of he said, she said, people seeing sharks.
And what was the 2 years you just read?
37 and 95.
That's quite the distance between.
Well, keep in mind, these are biologists confirming the animals.
Yeah.
We're talking about really rare things. In this study, published from the Marine and Fisheries Science, Connecticut Museum Center of Paleontology, Ryan Shields and Nicholas Gardner, a librarian at WVU, Pontiac State College, reviewed hundreds and hundreds of reports of bull shark sightings in the Mississippi River and compared them to archaeological and paleontological evidence of sharks moving through this river. A fisherman's tale from 1937 sparks the researchers' interest in bull sharks upstream after two fishermen caught a 5-foot, 84-pound bull shark in Alton, Illinois, just 24 miles outside of St. Louis. 58 years later, in 1955, a fisherman near Rush Island, Missouri, caught another bull shark. The research confirmed these two sightings. Besides them, the sighting record in the United States were littered with incomplete reports. Bull sharks typically live in warm ocean saltwater, but are one of the few species that can adapt and live in freshwater environments. Great white sharks, for example, can only survive in saltwater. And most shark species are pretty exclusive to
bound to saltwater, yeah.
And we could talk about that. Bull sharks, though, they migrate into freshwater regularly. They end up in lakes and quarries and all kinds of stuff. They're in Australia, Asia, Africa, and North America and South America. Pretty much anywhere that's warm-ish. These guys can end up in, like, New York and stuff like that in their summers and stuff like that.
Are sharks pretty much, like, worldwide?
There's no body of water
that's just bound to one
shark.
That's
saltwater that has no sharks.
I don't mean no sharks. I mean, can sharks pretty much travel all around the world depending on temperature?
Yeah, some species are locked in because they can't go around the continents. Okay, they can't handle the cold. Yeah, they can't handle the cold around the tips.
But if they could, there could be a global species.
Like whale sharks, for example, they go around like the southern tips of Africa and the southern tips of South America, but they don't hang out there.
No, they just they wanna move by. Yeah.
Same with great whites. They'll go down even further, and that's mostly because when adult great white sharks' diet is so high in fat that they can kind of help handle that a little better. But they still don't go very far south or north.
Okay.
You know, Greenland sharks and six-scale sharks.
They're the big boys that are in the cold.
Right? They are everywhere. They are in every ocean.
Okay.
On the bottom.
Yeah, at the bottom.
They are in the Antarctic to the Arctic.
It's scary. Imagine just what's laying on the bottom of our oceans.
The bloop.
Well, besides that, things we know about are scary enough.
So Shell and Gardner determined the bull shark sightings in the Mississippi River Basin could be described by three hypotheses. First, that far upstream traveling became a new behavior for the species around 1 million years ago. While this is unlikely, the research continues. The bull shark's ability to survive in freshwater may be a novel, but also evolutionary. Second, bull sharks may be evolving to become more similar to freshwater sharks. If either of these hypotheses are true, the research believe these sharks are engaging in cryptic movement.
Ooh.
Yeah. Moving along into the Mississippi River Basin and avoiding representation in the fossil record. And avoiding detection by modern societies living alongside the basin.
Mm-hmm.
The final hypothesis notes that the two sightings of these bull sharks far upstream are just anomalies in super rare occurrences. That it's very rare for bull sharks to go that far under a mainland river.
Can't number two and three be true?
All of these can be true.
Oh, okay.
I think bull sharks, you know, we'll talk about it. Regardless of the past data, the researchers agree that further research should be conducted to understand the apparent cryptic species. Gardner hopes the collective of the environmental DNA through water, soil, and air samples can help scientists learn more about the organism in the river and live in the Mississippi River Basin. Yes. So what do you think so far?
Well, like I just said, I like all the ideas are possible. Are there any exclusively freshwater sharks? Does that exist?
No.
I didn't think so. Just making sure.
Not right now.
Run it by the expert first.
I'm not an expert in sharks or anything like that. But there have been several species of shark in the fossil record that were exclusively freshwater.
What happened to them?
Well, most of the time it's, you know, continental shift droughts and that kind of stuff. Mm. Mass extinctions. So sharks survived a lot of the mass extinctions, which you guys will hear about in a couple weeks on this show.
That's so, I don't know why I'm laughing. That's why, like, when our president does stuff like that, he'll... He'll say something, but he'll tell you the truth. The only time that he does tell you the truth,
he'll whisper it in the microphone.
Like, he's like, you know.
Well, he thinks he's talking to the earpiece. It's wrong, it's show.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyways.
What you'll hear about in a couple weeks.
So they don't survive mass extinctions as well as saltwater species because the habitat's much more limited.
True.
And more makes easy sense. To be polluted by mass extinction events like volcanoes and stuff like that.
So is that where, like, muskie and things like that, bowfin even perhaps come and fill their niche?
Yeah, I mean, that is...
Gotcha.
And we'll talk about bull sharks pupping and stuff like that. And
bull sharks what?
Pups.
Oh, pups.
It's called pupping when they give birth.
It's called pupping?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I
did. Like producing pups.
No, I get that, but I never heard the term before.
So...
Pupping.
Yeah. We're going to look at, could bull sharks survive and swim up the Ohio River? And this is... I've laughed at a lot of these articles I pulled up. Because a lot of them are written by journalists and not biologists, and you can tell.
So they don't... Okay, I getcha.
An avid Ohio River angler, you may have heard rumors of bull sharks sighted in the waterways and wonder if these are fearsome predators could really be lurking close to home. While any shark encounter in the Midwest River seems improbable, evidence shows bull sharks occasionally do stray into the Ohio by migrating long distances from sea. In this article, we'll be sharing some fascinating facts that help you understand bull sharks and how they end up astonishing far from the ocean. So we'll talk before we continue. So in 2008, I believe, was the last bull shark in Ohio.
Oh, really?
That was caught. Or 2008 or 2010, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
It was a 3-foot bull shark caught by Portsmouth. It is not documented anywhere besides it was a hoax. By that, I mean they accused this man...
Of hoaxing it.
Of catching a bull shark in Florida.
Bringing it to Ohio.
Bringing it in Ohio and saying he caught it.
Yeah.
My opinion, that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was a 3-foot-long bull shark, a young one. So what do you kind of think so far?
I think I remember hearing about this. I mean, especially, I mean, someone that's never, that's not from Ohio or even from the Midwest might be hearing this stuff for the first time and be like, well, that's unbelievable. No, there's no way. But I think you and I both are kind of biased. We both know there's been stories of this for
our
whole life.
I have some really personal stories for the end of this episode.
And I bet, new into your profession.
This has nothing to do with what I did for a living.
Okay. Must still. Okay. You think you would have had an encounter, though?
So sharks don't shock well.
Ah.
So if anybody, and then food abundancy and stuff, when we talk about bull sharks in inland rivers and stuff like that, it's easier. It is much easier life for a bull shark in a freshwater river than it is in the ocean.
Ocean, yeah, the vast ocean.
By a long shot. First off, the food does not know how to react to these animals.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bull sharks we'll talk about later. Was just full of flathead catfish.
Really?
Because flathead catfish didn't swim away.
They don't?
They huddle down and hunker it out and try to wait for the predator to leave, and the bull shark just...
Yeah, just eats them.
All right. So bull sharks, Carthias lucius, stands apart from its ability to thrive in freshwater habitats that would kill other sharks easily. Some sharks, like, there are brackish sharks, and brackish is the mixing of fresh and salt water.
Right.
For example, bonnet heads, when I was in Florida in the St. John's River, which are mini hammerheads. They're very similar. They're cousins. Would survive, like, as the... So it's, you could tell when the tide was coming and going by the fish you were catching.
Okay.
Because you'd go from catching what's called a grunt and a mangrove snapper to catching bluegill again.
Gotcha. So the saltwater fish were in, now they're going back out. Yep.
Bonnetheads were one of the few that would linger.
Huh.
And gar would linger, too.
Gar?
Yeah. Because they're on the freshwater side.
Oh, the opposite way.
As it was becoming brackish, they would hang out.
So the opposite way would swing around.
You know,
okay.
Yeah, so these are both species. And stingrays would always be there, too.
Yeah.
But you would catch saltwater species for a couple hours, and you'd catch freshwater species the rest of the day.
Stingray?
Yeah, and then stingray would be mixed in.
Oh, I thought, okay. You meant fish in general.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. These stocky gray sharks have a blunt, rounded snout, can reach well over 10 feet and 500 pounds. I think our biggest one is around 16 or 17 feet and a little over 1,000 pounds.
A bull shark?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So here's one thing I don't agree with the article, is these are aggressive hunters with tough skin. I don't agree with the aggressive thing. The sharks in general do bite first and ask questions later because they're organs. They don't have hands.
Right.
They want to find out more. They actually have an organ in their gum that helps them determine what things are.
Okay, just remove this arm and, that's not food.
But, I mean, they're not biting because they're malicious.
No, I know.
They're biting for information. And we have this the whole point is that sharks aren't monsters. They're just animals.
Wait, who has this point?
My point is that sharks aren't monsters. They're just animals.
I don't agree with that.
Well, now you're not allowed to talk for the rest of the episode.
They're dangerous teeth machines.
Stop, because Jaws, that was one of Steven Spielberg's greatest regrets, is Jaws. The only sharks were killed on the East Coast after that movie came out.
Yeah, because they're deadly.
They're not.
You know, they kill more people than coconuts.
That is not true.
Yeah, ain't that crazy?
Coconuts, dolphins, vending machines, and cows.
Kill more people than sharks.
By miles.
Ain't that crazy?
Vending machines. 600-700 people a year die from vending machines falling on them.
Because they're trying to shake it or something that falls, then it's tips on them.
A 900-pound machine flips on them and they die.
Seen it happen one too many times.
So bull sharks inhabit warm coastal waters worldwide, but often journey upriver and into the lakes. In fact, they've been called the great white sharks of the tropics due to their frequent encounters with humans in very shallow water. And I'll share some bull shark stories. I did have in Florida. Me and Dad encountered a very large bull shark.
Okay.
Let's talk about how these guys survive in water. Their kidneys retain salt from seawater and excrete their ura, which is urine.
Yeah, pee.
So they actually can store this salt for long periods of time. They have a salt recycling system.
Okay.
So when they go into water, salt water or fresh water, they keep their salt.
What's the salt do for them?
It's just a part of their biological chemistry, their biochemistry in their body. They need the salt to survive because they have adapted to a system with high salinity.
Gotcha. Okay.
So like osmosis, you have to have a similar salinity level as the water you're in.
Right.
Because otherwise everything will leak out of your body.
Right. You're built for it. Yeah.
And vice versa. But so going into freshwater, they need to keep that up.
Okay.
They have a super enlarged liver to synthesize fats for energy in freshwater environments.
Okay.
They have specialized glands that help regulate salinity in their body levels, all over their body, from their nostrils to, like we said, the one in their right up before they pee in their kidneys. So these guys can actually pull some extra salt out of their food products that they eat.
And use it in their body.
Yeah, and store it for extended periods of time. We'll talk about the limits of this ability.
Okay. Everything has its limits.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a super shark.
These impressive adaptations enable bull sharks to swim into wholly freshwater environments in the lakes and rivers for weeks, months, or sometimes years at a time.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing some more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she's decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over the 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. My dog Grace loves it. She just gobbles it up. Go check out Badlands Ranch. You can get there at badlandsranch.com/corncrew and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/corncrew today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get select varieties of Powerade or Body Armor Super Drinks for 79 cents each. Then get a 2-pound package of strawberries for $2.99 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What if, okay, what if two bull sharks get in the freshwater, male and a female, and they have, then they pup, and then those puppers that pop out are fully acclimated to the freshwater environment.
So,
then they have pups.
We'll talk about that.
Okay. It's like that movie Evolution.
Did you watch it recently?
The movie Evolution.
It's nothing to do with the movie Evolution.
Well, each time a new thing is born, it's like more adapted to its environment than to a point they can breathe oxygen.
So what's the farthest you think a bull shark's ever gone up a river that we've documented fully?
Well, I would imagine from the port where, you know, Mississippi opens up into the Gulf, all the way up to the Great Lakes.
So in the Mississippi, we only have about 550 miles. It's the furthest it came from the ocean to up until Illinois.
Okay. That's pretty dang close, though.
Yeah, no, it's up there. It's up there. Don't get me wrong. It's not all the Elton is not, you know, Chicago.
Right, right. It's still southern Illinois. But didn't make it to the lakes?
We'll talk about that. We have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
San Juan River, the Pacific coast in Costa Rica, 115 miles. And that was due to a dam.
Stopped it.
Yeah, they can't go any further.
Oh, good. Dams are good.
No, they're not. 60 miles up Australia's Brisbane River, which we talked about in the Bunyip episode. In the Amazon, though, 2,100 miles.
That's quite the river system there.
It's half of the United States.
Yes, it's pretty far.
So this shark swam upriver. They estimated it had been in the river for about 8 to 10 months.
Oh, okay. They're going to say years or a second.
No. And a big, big female.
Nice.
To put these distance in perspective, to swim from the Gulf of Mexico to Illinois from the Mississippi River is longer than it would take you to drive from Cincinnati to New York.
Okay. About 12, 13, 14 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. So driving.
Driving.
On a highway.
So that's a shark swimming from the Gulf of Mexico to Illinois.
Yeah, that's pretty far.
Bull sharks don't necessarily make these epic journeys every year, though. When conditions align, it seems, they demonstrate an incredible capability to migrate deep into freshwater habitats. We'll talk about really what maybe causes this. Bull sharks in the Ohio River specifically, though. Could bull sharks have swam from Cincinnati to Louisville along the Ohio River? There are a few cases that make this plausible. In 2009, a bull shark was caught near Cairo, Illinois, where the Ohio River meets the Mississippi. Or Cairo.
Cairo, Cairo. It's hard telling.
This confirms bull sharks do enter the Ohio River mouth.
Okay.
This one has been disputed heavily, though.
Why?
As being one of the, another, so DNRs, and this is nothing with a DNR officer, this is DNRs as a whole, and, you know, when we get to the state level, don't like dangerous, quote-unquote, animals showing up, like mountain lions and bull sharks in their states,
right,
where they don't have them normally.
Right.
So this was accused of being somebody flew down to Florida, caught a bull shark, threw it in a cooler, and brought it up.
And then caught it again. Caught it. Oh.
People don't have that much time on their hands, right?
I mean, you have to be...
Money and time.
You'd have to have both to do this.
To fly a shark, even if you froze it and brought it up, it's still a shark.
And it's probably not the easiest thing to fly, like to get through this airport
security. Or drive it up.
Or that too. That'll stink.
Like we said, this report says the unverified 1970s newspaper report claimed a bull shark reached Pittsburgh on the Ohio River, swimming from the floods of the Mississippi River.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah.
So wait, wouldn't that be further than?
So it's unconfirmed, unverified.
Oh, okay.
So like we said, with the 2,100 miles and the 500 miles.
Confirmed.
Yes. Okay. The shark was swimming and then was caught. Like they seen the shark in the river.
Okay. When are we going to have the discussion, though, about why it's called the Mississippi River and not the Ohio River?
We can have it today if you want. We can hash it out. Other alleged sightings near major Ohio cities remain, but unconfirmed, but show bull sharks do maybe reach these northern parts of the river if it's possible. The Ohio River Direct is 1,100 miles to connect to the shark-inhabited waters like the Mississippi, provides a clear potential pathway. If conditions like high water levels allow, there's no physical barriers for these to stop these sharks from reaching Cincinnati or beyond.
Mm. Okay.
So what do scientists who study bull shark behaviors think of their chances of the Ohio River specifically? Dr. Neil Hammerschlenberg, a renowned marine ecologist at the University of Miami, told Live Science. Does it happen regularly? Probably not, he said. But the Ohio River connects directly to the Mississippi. It's definitely plausible that bull sharks could make it into the Ohio, he says. So he just says it's most likely an uncommon event for them to get this far up into the Ohios and southern Illinois.
Yeah.
But he says it's plausible. You know, it's probably a once a decade thing for a big shark to specifically make it up.
Makes sense.
But smaller sharks, which we'll talk about, probably do. So risk of bull shark attacks in the rivers. Despite their fierce reputation as river monsters, experts agree bull sharks pose minimal risk to people using inland waterways. There have only been about 12 confirmed unprovoked bull shark attacks in North America since 1837.
That's pretty rare.
So unprovoked is a big thing. People get stupid with bull sharks.
You mean, so they have a separate account of unprovoked and then provoked attacks?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, like bison. Almost all the bison attacks are people getting way too close to bikes.
Yeah.
So people have done really stupid things with bull sharks.
Okay.
You play stupid games, you get stupid prizes.
That's very true in life.
Compared to other cases of injury, shark attacks of any kind are extremely rare. Like, I think in the world, it's 4 to 8 on average are killed by sharks every year, 4 to 8 people.
Okay.
And like I said, 600 or 700 are killed by vending machines falling on them in the U.S. So just remember that when you walk past a vending machine, it's much scarier than a big bull shark.
Or a coconut, a palm tree, or whatever.
And it's still, you know, anywhere you think there could be bull sharks, it's wise to avoid swimming when heavy rains have just occurred near the river mouths. That's when bull sharks are most active feeding.
Mm-hmm.
They take advantage of the cloudy water to hunt prey. Prey can't defend itself as easily. But also, they don't see you as well.
Right, can't see you coming.
So almost all the bites from juvenile bull sharks and any sharks are almost always on people's hands and feet because they think it's a fish.
Okay.
They bite, and they immediately let go when you pull because they realize it's much bigger than they thought.
Right, yeah. And then half your arm is shredded.
Yeah. The epic freshwater migration continues. While sharks appear in places like the Ohio River are highly irregular, the fact is that bull sharks make such journeys all the time, and it's a testament to their physical abilities. So you go to other places around the world, warmer river system. So the Amazon's a little different because it goes across the country, not up.
Not up, down, yeah.
So the water system stays at a more regular temperature in a tropical forest.
Makes sense.
They can stay there longer.
Right.
You know, while we usually think of sharks as creatures strictly confined to the ocean, it is so fascinating to learn that some species have adapted to extended their hunting grounds deep into the river networks through incredibly long distances and regions. Next time, while you're bass fishing or paddleboarding down the Ohio River, keep an eye out for a tailgating gray dorsal fin. While extremely rare, it is not entirely outside the realm of possibility. It's just a wandering bull shark might swim by alongside you.
I'm just picturing like there's like a river tour guide, you know, guy talking. He's got his group of people. And then someone gets a bull shark, just grabs on their arm. And he's like, no, it's okay. He's just tasting you. Just pull away. And they rip their arm out. It's just halfway gone, shredded.
I literally just like, seen somebody jump on a bull shark on Instagram.
Gosh.
They were feeding sharks.
Like, and he jumped on it.
Off the boat. And I don't know if he thought it was like a whale shark or something. Because I've seen videos of people jumping on whale sharks.
Yeah.
And that's not smart either.
No.
Keep in mind, an animal the size of a semi-truck could accidentally kill you so fast.
Just not even trying.
Yeah, just because you panicked
it. Out of panic.
You panicked it, and it smacked you with the tail, and now your organs are liquid.
Yeah. Idiots.
Yeah. I love sharks. Sharks don't... We kill... what was it? We kill, like, 200 million sharks every year, and really? They kill four of us.
Dang. No wonder why they...
Why they hide from us?
Or that, too, yeah. I've heard sharks good, though. Heard the meat's good.
Meat's good, but the finning industry, which we'll talk about, is horrid.
That's a difference.
Horrific.
I never had shark fin soup or nothing, but...
Nobody should.
I don't want it.
Just eat the whole animal.
Yeah, eat the back straps.
Okay. So bull sharks, they have... they actually pick pupping grounds. So a lot of juvenile bull sharks end up in really freshwater environments like you were joking about earlier. Because they pick... Last time, bull sharks give birth in mangrove estuaries. Because it's not a lot of big predators for their pups. They're pretty much, when they come out, they give live birth. So they're pretty much the size of most of the other big predators in the area.
Okay.
And they have the temperament to go with it.
Right, yeah. Sharks.
Besides the occasional big barracuda and snook.
Or bowfin.
Or bowfin if they get, you know, really fresh water. Moms have been witnessed, so Jeremy Wade did River Monsters. They were tagging bull sharks in Africa where they were having a bunch of problems of attacks in rivers.
I remember that episode.
And the problem they found out why is people were accidentally swimming right in the middle of a pupping ground.
Oh.
So these giant pregnant females, they're on the verge of giving birth,
are
getting a nermite, you know, invaded upon by people. So the bites were a little more aggressive because they were trying to give birth.
Right, yeah.
So bull sharks have been documented giving birth in fully freshwater environments.
And you know how pregnant females are, you know. Their nerves are on end, they're aggressive, they're hormonal.
Emily is sitting...
You never know when they're going to bite.
Emily's sitting like 2 minutes or 2 feet behind Jay. Two minutes for her to get to him.
I'm in striking range, I think.
So bull sharks do give birth in fully freshwater environments.
Aha.
Now, we don't have a lot of data. I try to look into that a little bit more happens.
It's not like evolution, the movie.
No.
They're not born adapted.
I don't know. But I don't know if they have to, you know, go to a saltwater environment kind of quick because it's only been documented, I think, within 30 or 40 miles of the saltwater line or the brackish line. So it's not super far up or anything like
that. Right, yeah. Just probably far enough to be safe.
Yeah, and I think that's what it more is.
Mm-hmm.
Adult bull sharks. So there's one that was caught in the Red River of Arkansas that I think was 400 miles from the ocean, 500 miles from the ocean. River miles, not as a crow flies.
Right.
Very
right
big
here.
Difference.
Yeah, it is.
They did a gut survey on it. So they basically take a hose, put it in the stomach, fill it full of water so they throw up. So the animal gets to go back alive, just loses its lunch.
Right.
It was pretty much exclusively flathead catfish.
Oh, okay.
Which would make a lot of sense. You know, flathead catfish are a high protein source.
It's just
they're
a nice
chunky fat fish.
Catfish buffet on his way. He just kept going like James Wood and the piece of candy.
Ooh, piece of candy.
Yeah.
Piece of candy.
A flathead catfish.
Before, so I'm trying to think of what else. But yeah, so bull sharks in freshwater environments. There's a golf course in Florida. And some of our listeners may be able to sign some more information. Depending on which article you read, and the golf course itself says these sharks have been in there for 6 years.
Okay.
In their pond.
Yeah.
So one day after, I can't remember which hurricane it was, but one of the hurricanes, they, you know, you go start cleaning the golf course. One of the owner of the golf course is out there playing around a round of golf. and just to, you know, first time that they've been back since the hurricane. And his ball goes, knocks in the pond. And he goes over by it, and he sees something swimming in there. He's like, oh, we got alligators, so I got to call somebody about this alligators. And he takes his golf club, and he starts splashing the pond to get the alligator up. He wanted to see how big it was. It's not an uncommon, you know, he knows.
Right.
He's been around a lot of alligators. So he just wanted to see how big it was to tell the guy. And a giant bull shark swam aggressively at the golf club that was probably starving.
Yeah.
And, you know, tried to get the golf club and then swam back away. And he's like, oh, my.
That's a shark.
So they tried to get it removed, and they couldn't find anybody to take it. He did not want it killed. He was very adamant he did not want this shark killed. So nobody would come take it out for him. So he started having people feed it.
Oh, no.
And no, just to take care of it. It's in a pond.
Yeah.
You can't leave. So he's like, it's just going to feed it till the next hurricane lets it get out.
Yeah.
And after the next hurricane, there was now two bull sharks.
In the pond? In the same pond?
Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
Well,
or you think it was already there?
It could have been already there, and it could have been mistaken, one bull shark for two, or two bull sharks for one, not seeing at the same time. But they kept feeding it. It says 6 years. It's the most I could find. I don't know, though. It could be a gimmick to get people there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So
you never know. If it was on the internet.
We really don't know. It's on TV and stuff like that. You can look up the news. Like, I mean, we'll go look up there on YouTube. You can see the news articles, and there's sharks in this pond.
Yeah.
But I don't know their limits, and I don't think any biologist could really give a hardcore definition of
how long they can survive in fresh water.
I'm going to say, in my personal opinion, the average bull shark, you know, that's really pushing it, 10 months, 11 months, years probably. I think that is possible depending on their diet.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if they're getting fed french fries at the from the golf course,
yeah,
that's a lot of salt.
Salt, yeah. Maybe it could be.
Also, you know, if it's occasionally getting ground leakage from salt water and stuff like that, so the pond may be a little more
some way to acquire
salinic.
It. Yeah. It could be the pond could be rubbing up against the bottom of a or top of an old salt mine. Slowly, a slow drip of salt into the water.
So let's talk about how sharks get into the Great Lakes.
Okay.
That's a debate.
Remember the one catapult thing that the Navy built out in the middle of the Atlantic.
So I looked up talking about great white sharks for Lake Erie, the Lake Michigan attack.
Okay.
There was Lawson was his last, George Lawson.
Okay.
Which was, as far as I could tell, the most violent attack from a shark in fresh water, you know, this far north. A bunch of people argue now that that's impossible because the so I got to be careful talking about this because I'm still on some NDAs. But they say the electrical barriers they put in the Ohio, the Mississippi, and then the Illinois River and stuff like that, they do go into the Great Lakes through the shipping canals. So there's gates and stuff. There's these electrical channels that keep the fish out. They keep the silver carp out and stuff like that. These Asian carp that are invading.
Right, yep.
And just to say that they've passed like 36 of the 37, these carp have.
Hmm. So it's not working.
It does work, but the problem is with the carp is they school enough. They
bull rush their way through it.
Yeah, they use up basically. I'm drawing a blank on.
They weaken the charge.
They weaken the field enough that they can pile through without them killing it.
Right. Yeah.
So to say bull sharks can't pass that or follow a school of fish in or something like that, I think they'd avoid it until you got weakened enough or something like that. So that's one way they can get in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for Lake Erie, ships come in from like Niagara and stuff like that. There are canals that go to the ocean that way.
Yeah.
Bull sharks are only there in that area, though. It's very rare, but in the summer months, they go that far north to get into the Great Lakes from that way. Hmm. But whales will follow ships in, for example. So in the shipping canal in Florida near Daytona, my family was down there when the fin whale got stuck inside the shipping canal because it followed a ship in.
That had to be quite the sight to see.
Yeah, it was rough for it.
The whale, sure it was, yeah.
Because it was sandbar, he was stuck.
Yeah.
They had to drag him back out, and I don't think he survived. They said he lived,
but
I don't personally think he did.
A feel-good story.
Yeah. So a whole freaking whale followed a ship in.
Right, yeah.
So to say a bull shark can't
slip through
with these is a whole nother thing.
Right, yeah. Very plausible.
Do you have any questions about bull sharks?
Why don't we just start capturing them and bring them into our river systems to get rid of these carp and stuff?
Because it never works.
Why not?
Bringing an animal in history to get rid of another animal has never worked once.
But you know they can't stay there forever. Eventually they'll all die off.
It's never worked once.
At least in the time being, it's like, all right, at least throw them in there, so let them eat up a bunch of
sugar
stuff.
Sugar cane toads are about the most famous.
But that stuff can survive. We know a fish can't
survive. So a couple stories before I continue my next little thing. Is that when I was in Arkansas, I was helping a guy run hoop nets.
Okay.
He was in the middle part of the Red River, and he had a bull shark in one of his nets. I wasn't there for it, but he showed me, he had pictures of it. He showed me the bull shark. Like, it was
a legit bull shark.
They had a bull shark in an area that the DNR of Arkansas said there's no way a bull shark got up there and got a hoop net. So hoop nets are full of catfish.
Yeah.
Bull sharks are eating catfish.
Right.
They're big. Like, me and you could crawl in them. When we were there, we had an 8-foot gator in one.
Yeah.
So a 6-foot bull shark is easy to get, you know,
in this.
Also, he showed me a newspaper article. I got to call Tom and see if I can get this stuff for when this episode comes out. He's an old boy from Arkansas, though, so I don't know.
Gotcha.
He had a newspaper clipping from his dad who supposedly shot and killed a bull shark off the Memphis Bridge.
Oh, nice.
He had his 308. He was driving when it was like a two-lane road.
Yeah.
And seen a bull shark swimming up the Ohio or the Mississippi.
So he pulled over and shot it.
He just pulled over and started shooting with his 308 till it flipped over dead.
Yeah.
And then he had catfishmen in a boat. He was screaming, and they got it and got pictures with it.
That's insane.
It was unless I may not get proof from Tom, but those are all hearsay stories.
It's just a sign of different times where you just pull over. I mean, not to say it still doesn't happen now, because I have a friend who used to drive around with a shotgun or a .22 in his lap and
just shoot sharks.
Not sharks, but you know, groundhogs, raccoons, cats, anything he's seen on the road.
I had a friend like that too.
Yeah, not good, but he lived a pretty entertaining life.
So, what have I told you? That it's not just bull sharks that end up really far upstream.
Uh-oh. Is this harkening back to our initial story?
The Leakery Chomper?
Yeah, with the bite marks?
The cookie cutter sharks?
Yeah.
Did you ruin my ending already?
Well, no, I don't think so.
No, you didn't.
Cookie cutter sharks aren't that big. We've already established that.
They may be that big. I didn't look into it. As far as I know, they're small. Salmon shark washes up on the shore of landlocked Idaho. So salmon sharks, they live exclusively in saltwater. They've never been documented, barely. There's a couple cases that some of the natives of Alaska, the Inuit people, saying that they'll follow the salmon runs up and they'll go a little bit into the river, but they can't handle it, so they rush back out really fast. But washed up on the shore of the Idaho's freshwater salmon river.
Okay.
So the shark is usually only found in parts of the northern Pacific Ocean.
Idaho. Idaho, okay. I thought you said Iowa.
Idaho, way far away from the ocean.
Yeah, okay.
So salmon shark are exclusively saltwater, cold water sharks. They are closely related to great white sharks.
Okay.
When you really look at them, they really look like a great white shark. They tend to avoid people, though, very much. So Jeremy Wade, I believe, he covered it on the Corkscrew Killer episode.
Okay.
They grow up to 10 feet long and 1,000 pounds. But experts say Idahoans shouldn't worry about sharks in their rivers. So residents of Idaho were hooked by an unusual sight in mid-August when they came across the body washed up of the Salmon River. The Idaho Department of Fish and Game was flooded with calls of people after stumbling upon a shark on the banks of the freshwater Salmon River. The post from the Clearwater Region Fisheries Manager Joe DuPont on the IDFG website confirms that the shark did appear to be a salmon shark, which, as far as most scientists agree, cannot live in freshwater.
Right.
Salmon sharks can grow, like we said, anywhere from 6 to 10 feet long and up to 1,000 pounds. What's especially interesting because, unlike many shark species, which prefer warmer water, the salmon shark are best, you know, capable for cold water. The ability they also are one of the few to be partially endothermic,
which means they can regulate their own body temperature.
Yes.
Okay.
They can raise their body temperature to match and even exceed surrounding waters, Alaskan Department of Fish and Game says. Yeah. Sorry, I'm getting there. Usually they can maintain a constant body temperature about 78 degrees Fahrenheit, regardless of the water temperature around them. The salmon shark are usually found in subarctic and temperate parts of the Pacific Ocean, a fair distance from landlocked Idaho. Despite the whole fishy situation, DuPont didn't seem worried. He thought the entire case might be just a prank.
The whole fishy situation.
Here's a quote from him. It's a safe to assume that somebody dropped this on our shores for a good laugh. I certainly have a laugh about it. It would have been a great April Fool's Day joke, but this was in August. Rest assured, we have no sharks swimming in Idaho, He seems very confident. It's unclear how someone would transport a salmon shark to from its usual habitat to Idaho, at least alive. Per the University of Fish of Florida, it only became possible for sharks to be taken out of water and put into other habitats safely because of large equipment like stretchers, extreme gentleness with the sharks' bodies, and machines that pump water over their gills constantly. They actually have an apparatus they put in sharks' mouths to keep them breathing.
Okay.
Transporting sharks is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of our bigger species like salmon sharks and great white sharks they are not in captivity because you cannot touch them.
They have to be moving constantly. Yeah.
Residents weren't wrong for feeling some alarm. They have been cases of mistaken shark sightings this summer from officials like Ted Cruz's cocaine sharks off the coast of Florida, and generally strange behaviors from the king of the seas, like the increasedness of attacks in New York, which is just a news article, hyping everything up.
Right. Yeah.
The head of Department of Fish and Game did not respond immediately to the request or comment from the insider, sent the outside regardless of business hours. So, yes, I can't find anything more about the salmon shark. It is a thousand plus miles outside of the ocean.
Right.
It was, I believe, a 5.5 foot long shark.
That's pretty big.
They're rare.
Yeah.
Especially, they're hard. They're ocean fish. They follow salmon runs specifically. They eat salmon a lot. They seem to avoid mammals. They differentiate from their cousins, the great whites, that are mammal specialists.
Right.
They get really big. So, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know. I don't believe the prank angle personally. Because that's
prank.
A lot.
It's like the guy that did the same thing.
See,
bringing up to Ohio or whatever. Yeah. From
I think they would have caught a nurse shark or something like that, or a leopard shark or a carpet shark. Like these other, on the coast there, Pacific Northwest.
Right.
A lot of more common sharks. A salmon sharks would be a rare find for them.
In general, yeah.
They're mean. They got a big mouth on them full of teeth. So getting it and trying to put it in a cooler. A human-sized shark,
yeah,
and drive it a couple, 1,000 miles inland. I believe our friend Nelson from Flavors of the Forest said when he drives to Idaho, it's like a 12-hour drive.
Dang!
So that's a long time, he's not even on the he's close to the coast,
right? Yeah.
So that's a long time to be hauling a shark carcass to dump into a river in the middle of nowhere, Idaho,
just to have
to say that maybe, hopefully, somebody sees this thing washed up,
right?
And it doesn't just shoot down the river, and I get a laugh out of it,
right? Yeah. Yeah, it's very unlikely. I think my giant catapult theory is more plausible.
Than that, yeah. So, I don't know. What do you think about the salmon shark?
That's a weird story. We know animals end up in weird, odd places all the time, but still,
In my mind, what probably most likely happened is that he followed a salmon run from the ocean all the way up.
Just got disoriented and lost and just kept going until he couldn't
going.
Go.
Just kept going until he died from, lack of salt. He'd have to do that journey very quickly, but if he's following the salmon run, they do that in days and weeks and stuff like that.
Might get distracted and just keep going.
He may not have had a choice at that point. He might have been, so these sharks like great whites and salmon, they can't act on a starving basis.
Mm-hmm.
They need high fat foods. Mm-hmm. They pick high protein, high fat foods like seals for great whites and salmon for salmon sharks. So they're kind of constantly almost running on empty in these, cases of pursuit.
Yeah.
So this shark individually may not have had a choice to turn around and try to make it back to the ocean. May have to keep following the salmon school to keep eating.
Maybe he'd seen a golden salmon.
A golden salmon.
And he was just after it. Just had to get it.
So I already talked about bull sharks being stuck in. So there was actually a bull shark stuck in a stone quarry too in Florida.
Oh, wow.
There's going around on the internet video. There's a shark in a stone quarry in a golf course.
That could be many of things.
I mean, just, I think Florida. It was like. Yeah, just the hurricane probably.
A hurricane tossed him in there like Kobe shot a shark right in the quarry and swish.
Bull sharks, they start swimming around. They start looking for food and stuff like that, and they just end up in weird places. They get stuck.
There's be underground channels.
There you go. So let's talk about what could be happening. So let's just say it's all made up. It's all fantasies about sharks being evil monsters, and they're out to get us, so people see them everywhere.
Yep, I think that's it. Wipe my hands. We're done here. Call it a day.
Dad listens to the show. I forget the night. I don't think he saw, but they were on a pontoon out at Indian Lake, and they swear they saw a shark.
Yeah.
And it was a muskrat with a lily leaf swimming, so it looked like a big shark fin. So people kind of villainize sharks. So if you're looking for everything that looks like a shark fin, you're going to find it.
Right, yeah.
You're going to find a piece of wood floating. You're going to find a muskrat carrying a leaf. You're going to find, you know, you're going to find stuff that looks enough like a shark fin to say there's, I seen a shark in
your mind will be like,
I seen a shark in, you know, Lake Erie.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff.
It's like an ingrained human fear that.
And I personally don't think that's much of it.
Oh, okay.
I guess in my opinion, because a lot of the sightings slowed down in the 60s and 70s when all the dams were being rebuilt and being constructed.
Yeah.
Which points to me like an animal, you know, the animal is not coming up here as often because it takes more effort to get up this high in the river systems.
Right, it's harder.
Sharks make their way up river and into the Great Lakes more than we know. And that's the point. They just live and avoid us as part of nature. Is that these guys are probably, in my opinion, I think it's more often than people realize that they're in the Ohio River, they're in the Mississippi, they're in the Illinois River.
I believe that.
They're in the Great Lakes. They may die in the cold months. There's some evidence that suggests bull sharks are adapting to colder climates.
Ooh.
And I don't know if
they're beefing up.
I don't know if they can handle like the Great Lakes, but the rivers may be a little different because they don't freeze over.
They're going to conquer the Yukon here soon.
Yeah. That'll be impressive.
It will be.
Whenever Greenland sharks can handle freshwater, we're all dead.
It's coming.
It's coming. And then the last one I have is it's a prank. You know, these shark sightings are pranks. These are
all
dead animals.
Just a hoax.
These are dead sharks that people are driving 10, 12, 15 hours into with a car.
Hoax.
To throw into a river.
It's funny.
I don't know. The one guy, like in Ohio, when, you know, he brought the shark into a bar that was still, the bar people said it was still alive.
Jeez.
Because he knew nobody would believe him.
Yeah. Oh, I see. I understand. Okay.
He was out catfishing on the Ohio River in Portsmouth.
Caught a shark.
Caught a shark, brought it into the local bar because he's like, look, there's a live shark.
Yeah.
I just got it out of the river.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think about it all?
It'd be pretty impressive. I think I've heard it enough throughout my life from where we're from that their sharks make it their way up here, bull sharks in general. I still don't know. So I 100% have believed that. I still do. This definitely reinforces that. I'm still curious, though, what that initial thing was, the chomper in Lake Erie.
I think it was a young bull shark.
Just a young bull?
I also, during when we did the Lake Erie chomper episode like 3 years ago, I said it could have been a muskie, too.
Yeah, it could be.
Especially the kid attack. I don't know about the ladies attack because it was really small, the bites were.
Mm.
The kid was a vicious. Muskie have nasty jaws on them.
They got big, sharp needle teeth.
And like a barracuda. And when they grab, they shred.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's not a clean cut whatsoever.
Nope.
So I don't know.
It's a dirty cut.
I could see that being the other culprit would be a muskie.
Muskie, yeah.
Just, you know, big one. You know, grabbing a kid.
And they're up there. They're in the lake.
they're in Lake Erie.
Yeah,
I've seen them in Lake Erie.
Muskie are scary looking fish.
Yeah, they're pretty shy. They're pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a nasty bite. And like tiger fish.
If you've never seen a muskie's mouth, teeth, just Google it. Muskie teeth.
Muskie have bit and killed people.
Yeah.
And I think it was like very similar to the tiger fish story that Jeremy Wade covered with the girl that was bit in half.
Yep.
Because she was wearing jewelry.
Yeah. Shiny.
A guy got his wrist slit open by a muskie that he was swimming because he was wearing a watch.
Yeah.
And it bit, and, you know, its teeth just slid, and he bled to death.
Don't wear those fishing lures out in the ocean or in the water.
So, corn sharks.
Corn sharks.
I think they're just sharks.
They're here.
They're
bull sharks.
They've been here forever, and they'll be here forever, long after us. There you go. I have been the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I've been J-Clone 108.
We'll catch you next week, guys. Bye!
Bye!
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.